Chris, tell us a wild one.
I don't know that I got it. Too many wild ones. I guess the wildest thing for me when I mean, I had never been to prison.
That was your first time?
My first time. Mm-hmm. So I went through ARDC and then I went through Hunts, ARDC, and then I went to Cottonport first, and that was probably, I mean, the wildest thing was, you know, going to lunch, cup on a ledge, don't know what that means. Go to lunch. It was, I don't know, Chicken Day, Wednesday. Everybody goes to lunch. For some reason, I wasn't feeling good, so I was like, man, I'm not going.
There's only a select few people who stay behind, but go ahead. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of what happens. Yeah. So I walk out, and I go down, but I don't go down to the lunchroom. I'm like, fuck it. I'm going back to the dorm. And I go in, and I saw the, you know, under the bunk thing with the legs hanging out.
Did they have sheets up?
Yeah. They had the blankets and shit, but their feet were out, and you pretty much knew what they were doing.
For those of you that don't know what he's talking about.
It was clapping cheeks.
Called the TP setup, man. So the guys who are involved in relations inside the dormitory, they stick behind because nobody's in the dorm, and they get their shine on.
Midday. Like 12.
Hey, dude, they don't discriminate when it's time to go, bro. So there's a lot of signs in prison, like for example, he said that the cup on a ledge. I mean, do not walk past here.
Don't walk past the ledge, yeah, and go to the back. And I did. I walked right back there, sat on my bunk, and realized, and I was like, holy fuck, I'm in prison.
This is day one, lunch one, and well, you see the cheeks in the air?
It wasn't actually day one. It was week one, for sure. I think I got there they ship on Tuesdays. Yeah. I got there, I think it was like a Wednesday, mm-hmm. maybe Chicken Day, you know, where everybody goes except.
Hey, dude, that's a christening, man. They're just breaking you in, dude.
Yeah.
The other rule is like at night, if you get up to go take a piss and you walk and you see a set of shoes or slippers sitting up on that ledge, do not walk past there.
Or toilet tissue. Or
gun line.
Yeah.
Gun line.
Yeah. There's a lot of that, man. And there's no book, you know, you don't.
And ain't nobody there. Really, unless you got a partner, like somebody who just kind of likes you off the bat, nobody's educating because they want you to be the guy that they can sit on their bed and watch screw up. Yeah, then they want to see how you respond to it. It's all a game, you know.
Like
what I'm
in business, we call that failing forward. In prison, it's just seeing some cheeks in the air. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's probably the craziest thing I had, man. It wasn't a whole lot of fighting. You know, there was. I seen, you know, a couple of razor blades and combs and cuts up, but not really nothing shanked.
No shanking?
Nah, yeah. I didn't really get that side.
Well, that's
of it.
Good, man. That'll desensitize you quick. But this is Scott with Penitentiaries to Penthouse Podcast. To the left of me, I got your best friend in real estate. What's your name?
Your best friend in real estate, Scotty B.
A.K.A. Body Beatty.
A.K.A. the bad boy of real estate.
I don't have any more for you.
A.K.A. If you have a property that is distressed, you or your family member, and you're looking to unload it quickly, please leave a comment below because Scott and Scott would love nothing more than to
buy your
it.
Property.
We buy your dumps. We flip them.
We're number one in a number two business.
Thank you.
In front of me, we got Chris Dupuy, a.k.a. Chris B. Dicking Them Down.
Dang, that's from that day one lunch. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Chris B. Dicking
Them. Just joking, it's not.
So I used to be Will B. Dicking Them on there, but then it got reported and Facebook was like, you have to change your name. So I was like, all right, well, Chris B. Dicking Them.
He's a hoot on the interwebs, just let me tell you.
Oh, he's worth a follow?
Oh, definitely, yeah, bro.
I get a lot of traffic.
He's just like me, just a little bit more dirty, and he'll say it online. You know what I mean? It's wild. But
it used to be way worse, man. You know, back in 2000, I had Facebook in 2009. I probably had 30 banned accounts. I think I got 6 accounts now just because at one point in life you could get off of one and go to another, but now they got the whole IP address thing figured out and they ban them all.
So now you got to be a little bit more refined. Well,
where can the listeners follow you at? Where are we going? Twitter, IG, Facebook?
So I'm mostly a Facebook guy. I got my Instagram set up to where it kind of copies pictures when I post them, but I'm not too
savvy.
No, I'm not too Instagram.
Sorry about
not
it.
An IG
Instagram.
Guy.
He's a good one.
I'm a Facebook guy.
He's a Facebook guy.
I am a Facebook
OG
guy.
OG social
and I do,
media.
And I do push the envelope a lot. I do get banned a lot.
So it's all pretty good fun.
Yeah, it's all funny shit, though.
So look, tell us a little bit about where you're from, your upbringing, and you know, what life was like for you, and then kind of what led you to prison
before D-Day.
So, I mean, I'm from Assumption Parish, Napoleonville, country as fuck.
I hear it in your voice.
Yeah, you can. I kind of kept it a little bit. Just no, pretty normal. I mean, I went to a Catholic school. Had an older brother and an older sister.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
Shout out Catholics. You Catholic too, huh?
Originally.
At one point in time.
Catholic to Pentecostal.
We smell our
I never got the whole priest cup on the ledge experience, but...
it's out there.
Thank God.
Thank God, huh? But no, I mean, I had an older brother, older sister. They're both way older. I think one's 15 and one's 13 years older. So I was the baby, and I got babied, and... just probably about second, third grade, I just kind of started fucking up in school. Didn't really give a fuck, you know, bounced from school to school. You know, in Catholic school back then, you know, if your parents paid tuition, you passed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't make a fuck what you did. Like, and I did it all. I mean, yeah. So just bounced around, got to Assumption High, ended up going. My sister and my brother-in-law moved to Prairieville on this side of the river, and then my parents decided to move because of the grandbabies or whatever, so I ended up going to East Ascension. My senior year, graduated from East Ascension, but was a total fuck-up, right? Long story short, to get to prison, well, I got a kind of a long road to prison, but my parents had a shop in Plaquemine, Louisiana. So when I would fuck up in school, get suspended, I would go to
work.
I had to go with them. Yeah. Like, you got to come sit here, do nothing, work for us, whatever. So I used to do that, man. And they had this guy who bought a pawn shop across the street. So I used to go hang out at the pawn shop because it was fun.
The dude, like an adult Toys R Us.
Yeah, yeah. And the dude who bought it was 24, yeah. And I was like 14.
Mm. So he's like, looked
cool
up to him.
So he's cool, like, guy. Yeah, looked up to him. He, mm-hmm. You know, and man, I just started fucking hanging out over there. I was really, really, I was pretty intelligent. I catch on. I say intelligent.
Street smart, man. Common sense.
I catch on fast, right? Yeah. So like he would like, over time, I kind of started to like work there. Because mm-hmm. just from watching him, I kind of mimicked.
Picked the game up.
Yeah, mimicked what he was doing. And look, dude, make no mistake, pawn shop is fucking hustling. Like, yeah. you making deals, you making sales, you buying shit, selling shit. I mean, it's just like...
It's like selling dope.
It is just like selling dope. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you buy...
Cash, yeah, lots
you got,
of cash.
You got it all. Yeah. So what happened was I was in this pawn shop and... In the pawn world, you can't buy anything that's hot.
Illegal.
You,
stolen.
You can, but what happens is you have to turn in all that paperwork to the sheriff's department. They run the numbers. They find out it's hot. They come take it, and they don't give you your money back.
Mm.
So in the pawn business, it's not like you're going to go to jail. You're going to lose money, which that's worse.
Cash is
that's
king.
Worse, right? So yeah. guy comes in, stolen four-wheeler, I think it was back then. Hey, man, you want to buy this four-wheeler? It's hot. I don't know this guy, but I kind of know him. He comes in and out, whatever. I go to Brad. He's the owner. Brad, what's up? This guy got a hot four-wheeler. Man, we can't touch it. It's like, man, look, can I go by down the street and me buy it? Fuck yeah. So I remember I had a 1997 Nissan truck, man. So go down the street, fucking buy the... I buy it. I think I paid $1,000 for it, which back then was a pretty decent amount of money. And then through a chain of friends, you know people growing up. Hey, where can I sell this? Man, I got a guy wants to pay $2,500 for it. So I end up
$1,500 a lick.
Yeah, quick. And back then, I mean, I wasn't making no end. I was 15.
Yeah, so it's like
$1,500. That's a lot of beer money,
dude. It was a lot. So it. You know, that's what kicked it off, because I sold this and the guy who I sold it to, maybe I was a little older. I guess I was probably 16, maybe
that's
16, 17. Yeah.
To me, that's the same.
Yeah. So I and the guy was like, man, can you get any more of these?
Cause a hot four wheeler? Was he like Banshees or some shit?
No, it was like a hunting bike.
Oh, shit.
So he's like, hey, man, can you get any more of these? Because I'll buy all you can bring me for $2,500. However, they got to be Honda. So, you know, he started making a request.
It got to be matchy-matchy.
Yeah, so we fucking, so I called a guy back. Hey, man, can we
Keep doing this.
Can we keep doing this? Like, can we get more? Oh, yeah, I'll get you all that you want. So over time, long story short, that's what led to me. I went to
prison. That was your hustle?
That was the hustle. The hustle was buying and selling
products.
Stolen products, but it didn't.
Did you have one guy you were dealing with?
I ended up having a bunch of guys.
Because everybody found out Chris.
And I ended up actually sometimes kind of doing it myself, but I was kind of facilitating. So sometimes I wouldn't even see the machinery. And dude, we went all the way up to excavators. I mean, you're talking about, you know, some
excavator.
Yeah, dude, some licks were $50,000.
Jeez.
But I mean, it costs 20, right? You got to pay a truck driver with a low boy. Like, there's a lot of people involved.
How old were you doing this?
At that point, I was probably 19, 20.
So you had developed that hustle for about 5 years.
Dude, it was it took a while to graduate to that. You know, you don't just start doing it and get, you're not doing 25 full wheels. Like, it's you know, a month goes by. And then it gets to the point where now it's like a business. And dude, it was fucking nuts. I used to have all this fucking money. I'd go to a strip club.
Classic movie.
I'd stay there all night, mm-hmm. blow all this money.
Yep.
While I'm there getting drunk, because that's when the business is going on, right? I'm fucking on the phone. Back then, I had the big fucking blocky Nextels and, you know, two-way radio.
Oh, this dude was the coolest guy in the club.
Yeah, dude.
So he's working here.
It was 2 weeks.
He's in the strip club.
No time for a laugh. Excuse me, babe.
I got a business call.
You say that, but there wasn't that many calls. I mean, it was just, hey, you know, hey, bring it here.
Did you ever fake a phone call to act like you were more important to the stripper?
No, man. When you had, you know.
No, I'm just playing.
What were you dressed like? Are you wearing like some kind of like sweet all white suit in the strip club making these cool ass calls?
Fuck no, man.
I need a John Deere at this address.
I was a Nike sweatpants guy.
Oh, yeah.
Nike sweatpants. And
so how did you get, you wound up getting busted though?
I wound up getting busted. Man, I was, so this guy. Not gonna mention no names, but he was my cousin, kind of. So my dad's sister and his mom were best friends. So when I was growing up, his mom was Aunt Susie, right? Mm-hmm. And I hadn't seen him in a while, but we used to play together when we was younger and shit. And all this shit's going on, man. And you got all this stolen shit. And in my garage off of Jefferson, I had fucking...
everything.
I had 10 four-wheelers, 2 jet skis for myself, right? That's what I'd ride around. I'd take them on Amy River, like.
Yeah, dude. Chick magnets.
So I ran into Dwayne. I said his name.
Johnson, The Rock.
Yeah.
Actually, that was a typo. His name is not Dwayne. Yeah. It's Dwayne.
Dwayne.
Yeah, so I run into him, and he comes over, and he's like, man, I'd like to get one of those for my kid. And I was like,
not these.
No, I was like, you can get one, but this is what's up. Like,
oh, you told him what to do.
Oh, yeah, you can't. So in that business, you cannot sell any of that without knowing
what you got.
And in the end, I was really sophisticated. So I could talk about it now because statute of limitations is gone. But back in, you know, if you had they didn't come with a title. So if you had a notarized bill of sale saying you bought it, you was legit. End user, me, everybody.
So you just pick up the stamp.
You just order the stamp online. So you make up a fucking name, and now you got a notary. So you buy a piece of equipment from me. Here you go, bill of sale. You get busted. Just don't fucking tell on me. So Dwayne, I say, look, man, I'll hook y'all up. This is the move here. Take a four wheeler. Don't ride it on the road. Like, don't get caught with it. Couple weeks later, calls me up. Hey, man, I got this guy who wants to buy a backhoe. I was like, I'll get you one. You know, we put it. So a few days later, there's a backhoe sitting in Gonzales. And he calls me up. He's like, look, man, the man wants to look at it. Cool. I'm going to meet y'all there. So I get my best friend, Bobby. I'm like, hey, man, you want to drive me out here to look at this thing? I'm in the passenger seat. This fucking old dude pulls up, farm trailer, old beat up truck, wants to buy this backhoe. Think I'm selling it like $7,500. Don't remember what I paid for it, probably $2,500. And then, man, we get out and he goes, does it run? The old man. I say, oh, he wasn't old. To me, he was old. I was 19, 20.
He could have been like 30 or 40. Yeah.
Probably about Jim's age at the time.
Sexy old, okay.
Yeah, bald head.
So he tells me, man, does it run? I say, oh, yeah, it runs. So I get up on it to start it, and it won't start. Well, he climbs up on the, and I'm armed. I got a 9mm.
Got to in this profession.
I was open carrying.
Yeah.
Which saved me pretty a lot of headache later on. But he gets on a machine to try to like assist me in starting it, and like next thing you know, bro, he pushes on the gun, says, "Don't move, sheriff's office." And when I tell you 100 motherfuckers came out, you'd have swore I killed somebody. I mean, they were everywhere in fucking trees, hiding in ditches. They was in people's houses, neighbors' houses, fucking came out.
East Cincy can't rob no damn John Deere's.
Yeah, fuck no. So they slammed me on the ground, took me to jail. And that was my first offense, actually. They kind of knew what I was doing, so they wanted to make an example out of me. So... I ended up with a 15-year sentence, and my fucking lawyer, I pay this lawyer all kind of money. You know, you don't think about it. If you don't know, you don't know. You just kind of.
And you're young.
Young, you trust in them, and they tell you, hey, look, man, we're going to enter into a plea with a cap of 15 years. But you won't get the cap. Like, they're going to do a pre-sentence investigation, and, like, you won't get the cap. Like, they.
You kind of blindly took the plea.
Yeah, oh, took it openly in the blind.
You're going to say 15, but like, you're not going to get it. Like, yeah, 15, yeah. 15.
That's what they tell you.
Young and you're taking advice from a licensed attorney who you would assume, hey, how much you paid him? $10,000?
It's probably 5 or 10.
Couple of backhoes.
A couple of backhoes.
Yeah.
So you're taking advice from a man who you've paid a substantial
A trusted advisor.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's telling you, hey, man, take the 15. It ain't gonna be 15. So as a young man, you trust him.
And that's what it is. You taking a plea in the blind. They tell you, hey, look, it's just a cap. You're not taking a 15-year plea. It's just a cap. Like, you're not
gonna... He worked out a deal with the DA on another client.
Oh, whatever happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get the 15. Fuck Judge Mayer, Pegram Mayer. He's dead now. Rest in peace. Bro, I respect him a lot now, actually. A lot of people wouldn't. They changed my life with a 15-year sentence, because I feel like if I would have got a 3-year sentence,
you'd have been home in 3 months.
I'd have went and did it and got home in 3 months.
You'd have been doing speedboats in Miami then. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I end up going. I get a 15-year sentence. I get to Hunts. I get to ARDC. I actually get put in a cell with the guy that killed Mystical's sister.
Oh, watch yourself.
And he's on the top bunk. I'm on the bottom bunk. I've been there longer, right? Two-man cells, ARDC. And I never forget, I asked him, like, man, what you in here for? He's like, I'm in here for murder, manslaughter, whatever. I was like, how much time you got? And he's like, 8 years. And I was like, huh? And that just struck me, man. So, like.
You killed somebody, but you got 15. Right. He's got 8.
So you
got
to wait a week, use the phone for the first time. And I remember being in there and
Wasn't the dude who killed Miss Sister part of UNLV?
I have no idea. I don't.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was.
I don't know. And this dude could have been lying. You know, everybody's somebody in prison.
Yeah, of course. I met doctors. I met actual rocket scientists. Yeah. Met lots of attorneys.
That's what I'm saying. I could be. I'm not lying right now. The dude told me that.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know that.
Could have been a rapper. Could have not been a rapper.
Killed Mysticals. Whoever was. It was probably like, listen, it's like, nah, he wasn't me.
Right.
I didn't talk to that dude.
And we didn't have any other conversation outside of that. I mean, if you ever been there, it's just a 2-man cell of nothing. You're fucking just waiting and tests and this and that. But you could use a phone once a week. And I remember going to the phone and. Called home, and you know, mom always answers. Mom's like,
the only people who look out for you too
is mom. I mean, that's it.
When we started the P2P podcast, the first thing we had to do was find a podcast platform that could handle the stories of redemption that we tell every single week, Scott.
And at the end of the day, we chose Buzzsprout. It was user-friendly, even for two guys just starting out in the podcasting world.
Buzzsprout gets you listed on every major podcast platform. Gives you detailed analytics and other tools to promote your episodes.
And podcasting is easy when you have the right partners. And the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed.
If you really like us, follow the link in the show notes of this episode. And it lets Buzzsprout know that the P2P podcast sent you.
And you can save $20 by using our link if you sign up for one of the paid plans.
This is an easy way that you can help support the P2P podcast and save some bread.
Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. You save money and support the P2P podcast by clicking the link in the show notes or description of this podcast today.
So I remember calling mom and, hey, what you need? You need money, you need whites, you need this and then that. I said, Mom, I need a law book. Like, that's it. Well, what law book you need? I don't even know.
One.
Like, just go find me a law book. I need anything. So, bro, she sends me a code of procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're in hunts and that's all you got to do. And I got so engrossed in this fucking book that, because there was nothing else to do. But I got so engrossed in this book, man, I started reading it like I would a Bible.
Mm-hmm. Like every day.
Every fucking day. And I'm pretty good with comprehension and, you know, looking at my charges and this and that. And I'm, you know, I'm kind of seeing and, yeah, I'm guilty. And, man, how the fuck? The lawyer told me he wasn't going to give me 15, and here I am with 15. And then you get your rap sheet and you see, you know, this was in 2000. I see fucking 2015 release date. You don't know what your good time date is. You can't even read that shit. You're so uneducated, you know?
Yeah, and that's, but they don't do a good job of educating you about
it. Well, and that's part of the fucking
system.
That's they just herding you in there. Cattle, get in there. 15, not really, psych.
So we, so I go and I end up at Cottonport. And once I get to Cottonport.
It's a wild little place, too.
I realize I got to get in the fucking law library.
And oh, was Cottonport where you seen the teepee? Or was that at Hunt?
No, that was at Cottonport. First.
Yeah, that's where they, Cottonport's known for that. But yeah, anyway, go ahead.
First.
So Cottonport's like the bus stop of Holden.
Cajun 2,
butt
man.
Stop, yep.
Cajun 2, I never forget. I don't remember which B1. I bounced around a lot because I got a lot of write-offs. I'll get to that. So I get there and my whole focus is, you know, you got to go do 90 days in the field, right? My whole focus is my case. You know, but you get that everybody's fucking innocent, right? And not only is that everybody innocent, everybody has a case. And I meet this guy named John Spellman.
Sounds familiar.
John Spellman got a fucking 7 number with 5 digits, like 4 digits. It's 7,000 something, right? So this motherfucker been everywhere. Well, apparently he knows the legal system like super well, but he's a really fast talker, bro. Sounds like a fucking car salesman, right? Mm-hmm. And he wants you to pay him to work on your case. Well,
that's a hustle in prison.
That is the hustle. And like 99 out of 100 people don't know what the fuck they're doing. Like they convince these people, which is a shame, but man, I'm gonna get you a court date. So you got a guy with a life sentence. Bro, you could file a motion for commotion. A writ for grits, whatever. If you fucking do the order right on the back, they're going to stamp it, and they're going to give you a day in court. Like, you're going to fucking, they're going to come handcuff you. And what happens is when they get the subpoena saying, hey, you got a court date next month, they think, oh, man, I'm going home next month. Mm. It's like, no, you're not. You fucking going to court. Like,
but
you
on a writ for grit.
Yeah, on a writ for grit, but you can't fucking tell them that because, you know, dude got four life sentences. Yeah, dude got 4 life sentences, and then if you do, the inmate lawyer that filed that shit
fuck you up.
Right. Well, and not only that, I'm fighting to get in the law library. So I got to be cool with these fucking people, right? I ended up not being cool with all those people. But.
Wait, so the guy who's doing the hustle right now, Spellman. He's on the inside.
No. He's in the field, 90 days okay. In the field. So we out there catching our cut.
Which you was pigging. Potatoes or
no? We was fucking ditch cutting, fucking
oh,
with a
we,
hole.
Oh, yeah, you had the you had the swing blade.
Yeah, fuck. Oh, I
hated that.
I was on the line.
That
man.
Was the worst thing ever. When I would, you know, you get out there and get catch a cut, so you cut your line. We'd already talked about this before, but especially in June, July, and August, you know, out there,
ooh, it's hot.
And out of the rubber boots are Broganes, and Broganes are state issued just boots, right? They lace up, but they have no thickness, no padding. No, if you work for 90 days in the field, you're going to need another pair of Broganes in 90 days.
Mm.
If not before that.
Or less. That's if it's not muddy.
But I mean, you know what used to trip me out is the dudes that had like their work Broganes and then their visiting Broganes.
Yeah, all polished
up and stuff. That was like, you know, that was your visiting shoes. Me, I had like Adidas and Nike, cambray. If you had a laundry man, you could send your stuff to the laundry room and get bleached and be swagged out for the visit. So you got them. They give you these dark blue jeans, But if you got the hookup in the laundry room,
you get starched.
You get them starched and bleached, so you got the little, you know, bleach look on it.
Oh, like, you look swagged cool out.
Then you got your nice fresh inmate stencil along no the doubt, sign no
to go take a picture like this.
I did.
Yeah. No, that's a fact, man. So I meet John Spellman, and he's fucking running all this game to me, and he's telling me about my case. He's like, look, this is what you need to do. You need to let me do this. You need to let me do this. I file a motion for this and a motion for this and a motion for this. And I have a knack of hearing something and fucking it's locked. Like, I just have a great memory.
He gave you the cheat code, basically.
Well, I would verify. Man, I got to get in the law library. So it starts off, and I think this is by design, too. You have to fill out a call out and ask to go to the law library. So they can't deny you the law library, but they don't give you 100% access to it either. And that's legal. I mean, you fill out – for security reasons, you have to fill out a call out. And they put you on this fucking sheet twice a week at most. You might be on Thursday and Friday this week, and you go there for an hour, and then you go back to your dorm, right? And you got to leave all the books there. So everything John would say, I had an hour to go fucking do background checks. Well, bro, you're getting this law library. And don't get me wrong, the law libraries are fucking nice. I mean, they got every book you need. They have you have access, but you really only have an hour to fucking figure out if John's telling me the truth or not. I mean, that's where I was at.
Hey, you're in there.
At that point, right? So you're getting there and you're in this fucking intimidating building. And they write the laws and all those law books purposely to where you have to hire a lawyer to fucking read this shit, right?
Well, they speak legalese.
Right. You pretty much have to hire somebody.
That's the legal language is legalese.
Legalese.
So to speed it up, I, over time, fucking pieced enough together from – because the inmate lawyers, they'll tell you anything for a pack of cigarettes, right? So you, hey, man, they tell me this, and where did I find that? Oh, you got to go in this book. Well, over time, and I mean, all you got is fucking time, right? So over time, I figured out how to manage these books and manage the legal system. And one thing led to another. I never paid any of these guys, but I learned. You know, so I get my transcripts. I file a motion to get my transcripts. And I think it was John that told me, hey, look, man, you got to check your Boykin. You got to make sure they Boykinize you. You took a plea. If your Boykin's good, you fucked. Like, you're doing the 15, and that's pretty much it. So I get my Boykin transcripts. They come in, and I'm fucking reading them.
Tell everybody what a Boykin
is. So a Boykin, what a Boykin is when you take a plea, it has to be knowing and voluntary. And Boykin is when they sit you up there and say, hey, on such and such a date, you did, in fact, sell a bulldozer to Mr. Johnson for $100. Hey, do you know you have the right to remain silent? Hey, do you know, has anybody made any promises? So that whole fucking spiel, which, bro, when you're up there, you don't know what the fuck that means. Like, they ask you leading questions, and you just kind of know the answer is supposed to be yes, but I don't, like, physically remember answering or waiving my rights.
Yeah, all this shit's happening at once.
You're in court, you're nervous. I'm about to not get these fucking 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get them right after.
Wait, so, and then when you're doing it, so you're waiting all day for every Tuesday and Thursday for 1 hour at a time?
1 hour at a time.
Bro, so you're just like the purposeful waiting to go outside. You're like,
right. Well, that ended up being short-lived. So after two or three, well, I'll tell you what happened. My Boykin came in, and one of the things that they have to do when they Boykinize you is they have to tell you your minimum and maximum sentence that you are subjected to.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in there for illegal possession of stolen things, and illegal possession of stolen things at the time. I think it's changed since then. I hadn't really kept up with it like I should, but at the time, they had three levels, $100 or less, misdemeanor. $100 to $500 was 2 years in prison. That was your max. Over $500 was up to 10 years in prison, max. Well, what these judges do is a clerk types all this fucking shit out, and they just read the Boykin, right? So I'm reading my Boykin, and when he Boykinized me for illegal possession of stolen things, she had typed that my maximum sentencing that I was facing was 2 years. And he fucking read it as 2 years.
but it wasn't. It was actually 10 years, and I got 10 years. So that was the flaw. That was the loophole. Like, it wasn't knowing and voluntarily in it. He never told me I was susceptible to 10 years. He told me I was susceptible to two.
Mm. How did you get 15?
Because he ran them, he ran them consecutive.
You had two charges.
Man, let me tell you, brother. Judge Meir was, they had it out for me. Politically, they had it out for me.
You probably stole some of their homeboy stuff.
Well, whatever it was. Yeah, I'm sure.
You got some constituents in the community. Yeah. Like, hey, man, we keep getting jacked over here. Right. Whoever is doing it, make sure you take them for a loop when you get them.
And it's like, when you're like a pioneer of the hustle, they're like, man, we got to shut this shit down.
Right. Hardcore. You got to make an example, right? So they gave me, actually, what he did was, my first legal practicing was the sentence being illegal, because that's what they did. He gave me a 12-year sentence. I mean, he gave me a 15-year sentence, but none of my charges carried 15. He just gave me a 15 overall sentence because that, you know, that's my lawyer told me I wasn't going to get. So our first motion I filed was motion to correct illegal sentence. And, man, I never forget this. It's burned in my brain. But I get in there, and he fucking vacates the 15, and he gives me 12 on, like, a burglary. I had, like, four or five different charges, but he gave me 12 on, like, a burglary, and he gave me 3 on, like, the illegal possession. And he was, like, and ran them consecutive. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, you're going to do them 15 years. He told me that. You're going to do them 15 years. I was like, fuck, man. And I mean, that was backbreaking. And at the time, I didn't know I wasn't Boykinized fucked up. But once I figured that out, that I wasn't Boykinized correctly, I mean, dude, a fucking light switch went off. And after that, I was in the law library 5 times a week. Like, because the law library is up where.
How'd you get that access?
Well, that's what I'm about to tell you. The law library's up where church,
education,
Bible study, education, like, it's up by the school, right?
Okay.
And they have a command center. And in order to get to church, all you have to do is, like, show your ID. Hey, going to church. And they do church. Bro, they do. I went to Baptist church. I went to Muslim. Like, I went to all the fucking churches.
You was the only white guy in the Muslim church.
Well, I never made it to the Muslim church.
Oh, you was just acting like you were going to
Ferris Bueller day and off.
No, hey, look. Yeah, I'm going up here. And they just let you right past the command post. I mean, you can't go anywhere. It's all fenced in and shit. You got.
Yeah, but you just took a right instead of a left.
Correct. I'd jump in this, you know, yeah. And so that happened, and over time, I started getting caught. I started getting busted. They realized that. And, you know, you busted, you get wrote up for being in a law library. And I'll tell you the reason why they do that. So because the whole bed trick, the bathrooms in the law library are, like, kind of secluded.
Yeah, so dudes be taking their old men.
So two guys will go up there, so they can
smack some cheeks.
Yeah, so they can do the cheek thing again. No cup involved, and they don't have to be in the dorm with a bunch of people. So they do it for privacy.
Going on vacay,
right? So that's why they police it so hard.
Church is the biggest brothel in the prison.
Yes, yeah, it's fucking nuts, man.
I walked down on dudes banging each other in the bathroom at the church, dude. I didn't say anything, but I turned around thinking to myself, it's a hell of a place to be busting your old man up.
It was pretty wild, man. So that's why they police it.
Like, we let this dude in here just learning law. Yeah. Next thing, people be slapping cheeks
right,
in here.
Right. So it got to the point where they would literally write me up. I would get a write up. I'd go to court. They give me, you know, 5 days extra duty, so you can't visit your family. You gotta do extra duty on weekends. So I was working 7 days a fucking week, but it. Once I knew I had the loophole, it was fucking over.
That was it.
Like, that was it. So I started doing that, and then it got to a point where they was on my ass. Like, I couldn't sneak in. I had to fucking.
Yeah, they were like, no, don't let this
I'd be like, hey, I'm going to church. Motherfucker.
Guards start having it out for you, so they're all looking for you.
And that's kind of what happened, man. I ended up with fucking, dude. I had 100 and something extra days, you know, days of extra duty, which is years, right? My whole sentence. But so then what I started doing was just taking the fucking law books. You gonna let me go twice a week? Cool. I need this fucking book. Tuck it in my pants. Bring it back to the fucking dorm. Work on my shit at night in the dorm. So I was, like, literally obsessed. with my case going home. And dude, for 3 fucking years, I mean, you know, you go to law school for 3 years, right? For 3 years, I was in pretty much law school criminally, not overall law, but just criminal law, and working on my case, getting my transcripts, building my defense, and fucking. I did that for 3 years. So,
yeah.
Dude, I had fucking paperwork upon paperwork. So then I started getting right. You know, they started searching my accounts because.
Accounts like your bed, your room?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another thing that happened in the process of that was what I was trying to explain earlier. You know, you got guys, 4 life sentences. They got a writ for grits. And they got a court date, right? And I start telling them and being vocal.
That they're messing people over.
Yeah, I'm like, dude.
Now they're saying you're messing with the business.
So now, right, so now.
Now they're trying to X you out.
Right, so now all the inmate lawyers can't fucking stand me because.
I just fucking know it all.
Right, because I'm dipping into that money, yeah. Which, dude, I couldn't consciously let somebody believe that.
They're going to get free. That's hope.
Right. 100%. Now, and so it went through that, and then they started telling on me. Oh, he's got books in his locker.
So now they're shaking you down.
Now they're shaking me down every fucking night. I'm having to get my friends to hold books and trade them for legal work. Hey, like, man, hey, man.
I'll do your paperwork. Just hold this book
right,
for me.
Right. So that
like it's drugs or dude, something.
So it's like that. It really is like
so,
that.
So what was the final thing you wound up being able to go back to court?
So I went to court, man, and I ended up giving the time back, and Judge Meir, same judge, because that's who sees it. And I think honestly, he knew I had a case, and he thought that once I gave it up, because he said that he said, you know, if you sure you want to, you know,
you try
to go back because you know you're susceptible to like I don't know, a million years, whatever it was, but. I had been working on my case and also building my defense. So I knew I didn't know I was going to win, but I knew I had a pretty good fucking shot of being found not guilty. And he reversed it, man. And when he did, now it's trial time. So he's got to set a bond because I'm in prison, but now I don't have a sentence. So they got to like bring me to jail. They brought me back to the parish. I'm back in the parish. He's got to set a bond for me, and he doesn't. He denies bond, which at the time he couldn't do. He had no reason to deny bond. And, dude.
What does that mean for me or anybody else?
You can't bond out.
Yeah, so you just can't, like, you're stuck. In a parish.
You have no bond. All right. Since then, they have laws where they could say that if you're like a big drug dealer or if you're a threat to society, they can deny bond. But it's very, very hard. They got to have a lot of mitigating circumstances. And he denied bond. And the crazy thing is, if he'd have just said, hey, look, $5 million, I can't swing that, right? Instead, he said no bond. So I freaking have to go all the way up to the Supreme Court. That just goes to show you how the courts fucking suck, right? Because you're talking about a gross, you know, abuse of the law.
Yeah.
I appeal it to the First Circuit in Baton Rouge. They uphold his decision. They basically, because they don't read it, right? They rubber stamp that shit. Some clerk fucking was hung over and the judge just signs it. Yeah, so I got upheld and then I went to I took it all the way to the Supreme Court on a writ and won, and which is fucking super rare, man. My attorney down the line ended up taking over and basically saying, man, that's a super rare occasion to win that. Nice. So I give the time back.
So you're something like a prison Johnny Cochran.
He's like something, fucking Rain Man, dude. Are you kidding me?
Like a Robert Kardashian.
You know, I actually sent some people home. Eric Whitaker from New Orleans was one of them. Had a 15-year sentence. Sent him home. Because some people do have cases.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
And you help them out. But, like, for the most part... I mean, they've been through the ringer, man. I mean, they know how to.
A lot of them dudes also screw themselves because they exhaust their processes. So, like, when they actually have a standing chance 20 years later, like, their process is exhausted. And they can't go back to court, and they can only do clemency hearings.
Yeah,
it's like the red flag in football. You only have a few like reviews.
You only got one shot, you're what's called procedurally barred. So if inmate lawyer who charged this guy 2 packs of cigarettes don't know what he's doing and fucks his case up because he filed, you know, a motion for commotion.
Yeah.
And this dude this dude's going back, you know, this guy's going back to court, but he fucked it up. Like, yeah. he doesn't get that
bro,
chance.
Bro, you already swang.
Yeah.
You already had one at bat.
So let me ask you, when, so you won in the Supreme Court, so you got released in what year?
I think 2003. It was, I went in 2000. So, yeah, that was
we were graduating high school. He was coming out of the penitentiary.
He was like, me too, y'all, where y'all going?
Yeah.
So, let me ask you this, and I like to ask everybody. So, you're coming out of DOC, Will Parrish, which you were DOC. What would you say the biggest challenge was for you coming home?
Man, I don't know. I kind of got lucky. I came home with literally nothing. No clothes, no job, no money.
Do you come from money?
Not necessarily. No. My parents,
people are all right, but they
we thought, look, man, my mom and dad did a great job of being, you know, poor and making us not know it. Yeah. I mean, I realize it now. Like, I make a joke. I cook a hot dog spaghetti, weenie spaghetti, and like I love it. I eat it today, and I realize my mom cooked it because that shit was $3 back then, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was always. I mean, we didn't necessarily know it. My dad was a Boilermaker. He worked a lot. My mom was a straight up housewife. Didn't really have a job.
So when you come home, you just had love. You didn't have a whole lot of financial support.
Yeah, I mean, by that time they had. You know, my dad had started a business. We wasn't poor or broke, but no, I come home and I guess the biggest challenge was, dude, I was still young.
How old were you?
I guess I was 21, 20. Oh, yeah. Let's see, 20.
It wasn't out your system.
I was probably 22, 23. It wasn't. That's why I ended up going back. Yeah, ended up going back.
So without going into great detail, when did you go back?
Probably not long after, a year or two.
Before?
After, cause same thing. Because they're on you. Dude, yeah. Look, the people, places, and things thing that they teach you at, you know, any type of drug rehab, that applies to all aspects of your life.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
You got to disassociate.
Disassociate. Show me your friends. You know, that
I'll
whole
show
saying.
Show you where you're going to be or some shit like that.
Whatever that saying dogs is, hang out, is fucking 100% true.
So you got back with the same crew and then...
Same people, doing the same fucking shit in the same town, and ended up going back to jail.
How long?
How long did I go back for? Mm-hmm. No, I just got arrested.
Oh, arrested.
Got arrested, bonded out, but it was a different parish. Wasn't in Ascension, so I wasn't really as...
New parish, new you. Yeah.
I wasn't really as marked.
You weren't famous. Say.
No, so I ended up getting probation, and I convinced these motherfuckers, because, you know, at the time, when you're doing that type shit, especially in prison, you manipulate the system. I mean, I graduated high school and I went and got my GED in prison because, you know, 3 months good time and all that shit, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you do all that. And then I end up telling a man, I'm fucking, I got a drug problem, which at the time I didn't. I had a money pussy problem. Like,
same
I was.
Thing. Lil Wayne says that's the same
thing. But it's the same thing.
Thing.
It's an addiction. It's 100% an addiction. I mean, the whole strip club, fucking, you know, money. And look.
Fast money, fast girls.
The whole hustle thing. Like, the whole making large amounts of money, you know, really fast. You get addicted to that shit.
Shit, I mean, sounds fun to me.
Yeah, it's fucking.
I understand. Trust me.
Yeah.
Well, look. So you got on probation.
Got on probation, convinced them I was a drug addict.
You went to rehab.
No, drug court.
Drug court.
So I'm in Livingston, right? So I did the whole fucking three times a week, three meetings, and bro, let me tell you.
You made it.
Well, I made it because I wasn't a fucking drug addict.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, that shit's hard for people who are not drug addicts. I couldn't imagine if I was.
That's why so many people go back.
If I was a fucking addict, I couldn't imagine not making it. And look. The only reason I made it was because my sister and my brother-in-law owned a business. So I worked for them. My mom, she would, like, if I went to work on a job and it was my day, green was my color. So if I had to fucking piss today, which at the beginning is three times a week, my mom had to come to a job, no matter where I'm at, Baker, fucking wherever, pick me up, bring me to Livingston by 3 o'clock. And by that day, by that time, the fucking day is shot.
Yeah.
So you can't go back to work. So I'm making paltry money. I mean, I'm not making anything. My sister is managing my money. She's giving me like $10 a day to fucking eat. I'd eat breakfast for $5.
Get the hot dog spaghetti.
Eat lunch for $5 or whatever. So I'm doing $10 a day thing, and that's kind of how the transition started into being. I could have never done it myself. Not holding my money. And I think the important part is like recognizing that a lot of people pride this, that, the other. My sister still holds my money. Like to this day, I get an allowance and I ain't fucking scared to say it. Mm-hmm. Without it, I would fucking blow it all. I just would.
Spending money's fun.
That's the person.
That would be like me being in a room full of opiates.
Yeah.
I would blow it all.
Same fucking thing.
Snort it all.
Same thing.
So, I get it.
So that's how it kind of transitioned as far as me like starting work. And then I ended up finishing drug court, working in plants, which fucking sucks. That's as bad as prison, really.
Yeah, I've been there.
So I started working in these fucking plants, man, and I'm doing the plant thing. And I think the best thing that happened to me was I got a call from a guy to go to California to commission utility scale solar plants. Mm. And that call was, you know, revolutionary in me overcoming the leaving that life behind, because it forced me to get rid of the people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have fucking friends over there. I went, everybody over there is new, and I'm working a lot of hours, and the only time I come home is for like 4 days a month. So when you're home for 4 days a month, bro, you know,
not really a whole lot you can do.
Yeah, you visit with your family, you don't really fuck around.
Important shit.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I ended up.
So how did you? So let's talk about what you do today. You're a business owner.
Business owner,
successful.
Pretty successful.
Tell everybody what you do.
I do the solar branch of it. So when I went to California, I was commissioning these solar plants. Mm-hmm. I did that for 12 years, 11 and some change.
Yeah.
And just got really fucking good at it. I've always done electrical work, but I kind of got interested in the solar work. Like I got
big money in the solar world.
Big money in the solar world, especially back then. I mean, you had fucking grant money, and it was
new. Wasn't government paying for a lot of that shit?
And it's at the time, yeah. They wasn't necessarily paying for it. It's kind of a misconception. They wasn't paying for it.
Tax refunds or something?
No, they were backing the loan.
Okay. Yeah.
So like, you can go get a company, like the company I was working for, I could go get. My first project was a $2.5 billion project. The government made it to where my company could turn in these drawings and say, "Hey, I need $2.5 billion." And the bank gave it to him.
Okay.
So that was the...
Thank you, government.
That's the subsidy, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were paying for it. Yeah. They were just making...
They're like, he's good to go. He's good to go.
Now you got tax... They got tax credits, you mm-hmm. know, credits on different shit, you know, buying the material. And it's still like that today, and it should be.
But, what's the name of the company that you have today?
Rescom Electric.
And what do y'all do?
So we do Generac generators. Oh. We do a lot of in-home generators. So the company's been in business for 21 years. It was remember the business I told you that when I came out, I was working for my sister, my brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. They started it way back when, and they was only doing generators. And probably 3 years ago, I worked for First Solar, largest solar company, learned all the stuff. And then First Solar decided that they were not going to build projects anymore. So I knew my job was coming to an end, and at the same time, I kind of saw a need for the niche work that we do, which we test transformers, we do fiber optic, and we do medium voltage terminations, and we do commissioning. So we don't actually build the plants. We do the specialty sub work with not a lot of whole liability, which I kind of like it like
oh,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we just kind of go in and do that. And then it was coming to an end in, I don't know, 2018. And we just kind of, I just kind of talked to my brother-in-law and my sister, and we just kind of had a mutual need. I needed structure. I was going to start my own business anyway. I needed resources and structure that they already had in place.
And my sister, they gave you the framework.
They already had the framework. I had the connections and the know-how. And, my brother-in-law is really, really, really smart, business savvy. I mean, they've been in business since I can remember. My sister is a fucking tyrant with money. If her checkbook's like one fucking cent off,
she wilds out.
She will spend fucking 3 days
trying to figure it out,
finding that fucking penny and running. She types fast as fuck on a this little calculator and runs a ribbon and does it. She's insane with it, but that's the balance that kind of keeps us together. Because, you know, she's without that, me and my brother-in-law would fucking, we'd buy everything, right?
Yeah.
So it's a good combination,
it's
man.
It's a good model to have.
Yeah, it's a good model to have. So three years ago or 4 years ago, whatever it is now, 2018, we kind of joined forces, and I ended up getting a third of the business and brought the solar in. And
now you travel the world.
Now I just fucking...
Dude stays on a plane, just FYI. If he's not here, he's flying.
Yeah, I fly a lot. You kind of realize that time, you know, you always hear that when you're younger, right? Time's money and all that shit. And when you get older and you start fucking actually making a decent amount of money, you realize that time is money. I mean, fucking.
You can't just be driving everywhere.
No, fuck no. And for a while I did, man. When we first started, dude, I drove everywhere.
Did you think that was like the hustle? Like, no, I'm hustling. I'm going to be driving.
Well, no, not necessarily. It's just like, you know, you start looking at plane tickets, can't leave till 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Well, if I leave right now at 5, I could be there for 10, like, and not buy a plane ticket, or even sooner than 10. I could be there at 5 if I leave driving, so fuck it. I'm just going to leave and go to Florida. So for a while, I drove, and that was when I was actually working in the field, which I still go out to the field here and there whenever they have issues that my guys, you know, can't cover. But we got some really, really good guys. The road work is hard as fuck, right? All my solo work is all over the U.S. I got guys in Arizona,
Virginia,
fucking Colorado, everywhere. And being on the road, and that's what I did when I was at First Solar. I was on the road for fucking those 11 years. It was literally 4 days a month.
Yeah.
Like, that's when you came home, right? And even I worked Christmas fucking, because these solar companies set up, it's kind of funny, not really, but they set up these fucking deadlines with liquidated damages and shit, or like bonus money. I remember my first job, the $2.5 billion one, we had to hit a deadline for an $80 million bonus. Well, man, at the end of the deadline, my bosses are coming in and, hey, look, we're going to commission these. And, you know, there's 60 of them. We got to commission them in 2 weeks. I'm like, bro, they take a week apiece. He's like, listen, I'll hire a commissioning guy for each one of these motherfuckers. I'll hire 60 people. I don't give a fuck. We'll pay them whatever.
You're talking about $80 million.
But it's happening, right? $80 million. So back then, especially, the Christmas, New Year week, a lot of shit was coming online, like, so we had to be there and missed a lot of Christmases.
Well, let me ask you a question. This will be the final one. So a lot of us who have been to prison, as much as we hated prison, do you feel like you'd be where you're at today as successful as you are without it?
Not at all. That's why, I was telling you earlier, like, you end up respecting, like, I respect Judge Mayer and all that. I realize that, you know.
The rule of law is there for a reason.
Right.
Even though we don't like it. Because we don't like to be separated from society, but we got to be.
Well, that's what I was telling you earlier. At the time, I fucking hated it. But now I realize that it's all one fucking process to leave where I'm at now. And fucking without that, I'd probably still be in prison. Because you go do, you know, you get a 15-year, you get a 5-year sentence. You know, you got to do two. You know, that's fucking sucks. But you get a 15, it's a whole
life
lot.
Changes.
It's a whole lot different. You start fucking doing the math in your head. Like, and I just had a newborn son. It's like, look, I'm going to get out. This motherfucker's going to be in high school.
Yeah.
So all that shit plays in your head. And I wouldn't be here today without prison at all.
I have a final question just for me. So with all your success that you've seen recently or however long you've had it, does your sister still hold you $10 a day?
No, I get more than $10 a day, but it ain't much.
Okay, just making sure.
It's not much, dude.
How's he going on all these goddamn planes?
Well, she's got to. The dude travels the freaking world. We're going to Argentina next month. How much is she giving you for that trip?
$10.
No, so to be honest with you.
Oh, she's coming, so she's bringing the car.
She's coming. Like when we went to Africa, I couldn't tell you how much I spent in Africa. Because when it was time to pay the bill, she fucking pays it. So
probably because you tip wild too. Like, nah, I can't even give them that.
Dude, I can remember being at the strip club. This
shout out strip clubs, by the way. They don't get enough love.
Hey, my sister likes strip clubs too, so that's why we kind of get along. But we was in a strip club after a fight at Lamar Dixon one time. They had some MMA matches, and I never forget, we was at the strip club. I was drunk as shit, like always, and I was fucking throwing hundreds, like, on, or it might have been 20s. I don't know. It wasn't once.
For the podcast, he was throwing $100.
Yeah, all right. Whatever it was. $1,000
bills.
Whatever it was. But I can remember throwing it up on the stage, and I was fucked up. My sister standing next to me pissed off like a motherfucker, and she's catching them out of the air. I'm throwing it, she's catching. I'm like, throwing, she's catching. And then finally she grabs it. She's like, stop fucking doing that. Like, give me your money. And I'm drunk. I give it to her. But yeah, nah, she...
So it sounds like probably when – have you ever been married?
I have.
All right. But probably your next wife will be somebody who's probably just like your sister.
I don't think they make those. I'll probably never get married again.
Nah, well. Never say never.
Well, dude, do what you want to do also.
I don't know. I've had some close calls, but I kind of got past the letting the government – I mean, fuck. Marriage is a contract, right? That's all it is. I mean, me and you can get married. I made
here
a post.
Here we go. Prison law real
dude,
quick.
Dude, I made a post about it the other day. I was like, hey, is anybody want to get married for tax reasons? Because what the fuck stops me and anybody from
you
getting
married? You almost
said me, but I'm unavailable.
He pointed right at me. For all the listeners,
I'm unavailable. He pointed right at me.
And I was like, fuck, I flip houses or whatever. But what stops you from doing that just for the
tax purposes?
Because it is only a government thing.
Yeah.
Like, it don't.
Yeah, people been getting together for hundreds of years. So, I appreciate you coming on the podcast today. You got an interesting story. You become a success story. You beat the odds. You ain't going back.
Hopefully not going back, man.
Just stay at them strip clubs with them $100 bills.
I hadn't been in a long time. I kind of don't do the strip club thing no more.
Whenever you said that there's been a few close calls of getting wives, were these all in the strip club that you've had these close calls? Like, I'm going to marry this one right here.
Oh, dude, you tell them all you're going to marry them, right? Because that's what they want. But yeah. I think at the end of the day, I don't think they want to get married either. I think if you open and don't lie about it and fucking explain it like I did to you, look, it's a government contract, right? You want child support. If I get you pregnant, you can get it anyway. We ain't got to be married. Like, you fucking run all that shit down to them, and then they start to realize, too, hey, I don't want to get married and have to go through that divorce shit anyway, right?
Yes, I'm getting a divorce. You convinced me.
So here we go.
No, don't do it.
I love you, Jamie.
If you do, I'll marry you.
Oh, there we go, baby. Texas. Right.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Hit that button.